Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Welcome back to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where we're shooting the shit with elected officials and candidates running for office to get to know the person beyond the politics.
Because politicians needed a rebrand. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whenever you're listening to this, you know, there's 41 days until the election when we're recording this, which is wild.
Tis crazy. Tis the countdown. I have to say, like, I feel a lot better about this time around of not just like last year's elections, because there's elections every year.
This time around, meaning this election.
No. And midterms, because I just feel like the last two, by this point in the hoopla, I'm really burnt out. And part of that is because we go so hard on all of the political stuff all the time. And then we would like get to this point, and it's kind of when like people that haven't been tuned in, which it's okay, we're happy to have you now. Like, let's fucking go and get it. Start tuning in. Yeah, welcome to the show. Let's stay with the show continually. Yeah, this is our circus and it is our monkeys, and we are well-dressed monkeys. Okay, thank you. And very politically informed. And that's how we like to be at Girl on the Gov and elsewhere. So just so you know, that's sort of the 411. But I think generally speaking, I just feel like a little bit better in terms of pacing around everything. Like didn't go too crazy. Took breaks when I needed to take breaks. Like never thought you'd hear that come out of my mouth, which
that's important. It's so important to take breaks.
It is. But I will also say one other thing that made me confident, something along those lines, is that I spent 2 days last week in Michigan with the head of elections in 6 battleground states and in key counties like Maricopa County, which, my God, I mean, I think anyone in this country County.
Doesn't everyone.
Literally.
Probably the most famous county, like, in the country. Would you – I think I can say that confidently. Okay.
This would be my question, though. The other county I feel like, but for different reasons, is well-known as Orange County. Like, Orange County, California, right?
That is fair on a cultural level. I think people would go, Orange County, not Maricopa. But
– I don't know, though. Because, like, generally speaking, like, even say, like, you're not normally tuned into politics – you know, the election night and nights after when things are getting tallied, everything is Maricopa, Maricopa, Maricopa. So
like, I know, but like even my friends would not know Maricopa County, I feel like, you know, like they'd just be like, what are you talking about?
You know, I'm going to throw a poll in the group chat after this. I'm really curious now.
Yeah. And, you know, anyways, speaking of friends and their political knowledge, I just want to emphasize how important it is to talk to your friends about the election. Check on them. See if they have a voting plan. See if they have all the details that they need. Because I can say that I had a friend a few days ago essentially ask me. I feel bad, but like essentially asked me when we were talking about the mayoral race in San Francisco. And she was like, mm-hmm. Oh, when's that one? And I was like, it's the same day, I fear. It's common sense, I fear. It's the same day. And I was trying to be so nice about it. I'm like, oh, it's the same. It's all the same. It's all on November 5th. Everything's happening on November 5th. Vote for all the things on November 5th. Mm-hmm. So that was an important reminder for me. And I just wanted to pass that along to all of you of like, just check on your friends, you know, make sure they know an election is happening, A, and B, like have the correct information, because I will say it is very confusing and it differs county by county, state by state. So yeah. And if you have questions about where to find that information, we are good resources. So always like slide into DMs and check on all of our social medias and things. We usually are plugging all of that and where you can get your most up-to-date information. But speaking of your Michigan trip, I do want to hear a little bit more about it. I think talking about election protection and integrity is important because there are a lot of threats out there, especially in these swing states, around poll workers being safe, around organizers and door knockers and canvassers being safe. There are literal physical violent threats being thrown around in some of these states in an attempt to scare people, to suppress voters. So did they talk about any of that? Like, what did you hear on the ground?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I was making like direct eye contact with Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, like the entire presser.
You better stay on the right side of the street, buddy.
6+ hours of like him and I, and he had this county clerk next to him that was, it'll be in some of her content, that was literally wearing like a purple shirt and like a fedora. And then Brad was like in a full ass suit. And it was a meme. Like, I can't, out of some type of sitcom, I was dying. Regardless of that, they, as well as the rest of the election heads per the battleground states, talked about those threats and like what that looks like. Like, some of them literally have been receiving envelopes with white powder in it. Like, that has been a thing that's been happening. Luckily, none of the, you know, contents have been a harm, but that is some of the concern. What about the 8th time as opposed to the 7th time? You know, there are real concerns. There really are some of these things. Post office or U.S. Postal Service is intercepting some of these packages and some of these threats. They did say that they are preparing across the board, their poll workers, the election workers and things, for some of the potential threats. And when asked, you know, what are they going to do if something should happen? And they said, we're nimble, we are prepared, we will, you know, figure it out on a dime, because like, that's who we are. We have a job to do. And I will say, across the board, both Democrat and Republicans sitting at that half table, whatever you want to call it, all were very much aligned on that mission and gave a lot of confidence in it. So I think I talked with more Republicans that like those 2 days than I did Democrats, and dead ass serious. And I'm also so Republican coded looking that I was cracking up.
No, they felt at home with you for sure.
No, I literally think they thought I was.
They're like, and she's giving trad wife. This is our girly.
Oh my God. Ew.
Little do they know you're the opposite. But
It was, generally speaking, I think really heartening to hear what they had to say in that regard. They also talked about some of the other like classic like myths and things that have been going on. The amount of time that we talked about the myth about dead voters voting. I mean, I was happy I was wearing black. I was at a goddamn funeral. I mean,
I know. I think I saw some clip from somewhere. It was on TikTok. Let me also preface this talk about this whole situation, put it into context too, because while there was bipartisan support at this event and across, you know, these swing states, which is so important when we were talking about people who are in charge of ensuring our elections go smoothly and then are certified and all the things. Like, I'm glad there's bipartisan support there, but let us not be mistaken that like this is coming from a like right wing effort to dismantle our election and to ultimately like
completely disregard results if they don't go the way that they want it to. And we saw that happen in 2020. It's another like big, big effort now and for this election too. So just like keeping that in mind as we head into the election.
I will say there is a resolution in Congress that I know, given how many numbers of people are in Congress, ridiculous, but you know, like over 30 bipartisan legislators signed, like saying that they, you know, guaranteeing that they will certify the election. So just saying like there are these things that also I do think need to be talked about, because here is like this effort to do that. Like, let's push it out there and then like force our representatives, no matter where we're living, to sign on to that.
Yeah.
And so I think that in and of itself, it's ridiculous that we need to have that, right?
I know.
Like that in it is crazy. But
it's important that people are heard and like continue to call your reps and be like, I'm worried about there being potentially political violence or some kind of unrest when election results come out. And if it doesn't go favorably to the right, then like people, if you voice that to your reps, so like you're concerned what could happen for that. You want them to vote yes on this bill that Sam just laid out. But like, we need to like collectively also, while we're talking about like vote for Kamala, do this, do that. It's also like, we have to kind of have this collective impact and voice around like, we want election integrity.
Yeah.
Full stop. So that's like a part of a big, I think, comms plan. We got to protect democracy here because the threat will be real even after the results come in.
Yeah. And I think that was a big topic that came up, partially just the panic that happens afterwards, because we will not know, from what I gather from the conversation, we will not know for a few days the result of the election.
Yeah.
Georgia, the next day, the election board passed a rule that's going to require all of the ballots to be hand counted.
That's
it's going
insane.
To take literally so much longer. Brad, who's...
So did Brad do that?
No. No, okay. And he came out against it. And so did the Republican AG of the state. Basically, Brad referred to like case law saying that there is a concept that, and the clip is actually on our TikTok, so go check it out, guys. But talking about this case that said pretty much changing any of the rules 90 days or less till the election is like no dice. And that even if you have an idea that like perhaps has some, you know, backing or there's a reason for it, that's not the time to do things. We can't make those changes thoughtfully, strategically, and with testing and all the things that need to happen within that time frame.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's like playing bait and switch with people. So he was like, no, thank you. Obviously, the election board did not listen. It was a 3-2 result. The three are Trump supporting people. The other two, there's one Democrat and one Republican, I believe. So crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Long story short, though, we will not know that night just from like Georgia alone.
Totally. Oh, it's so wild.
Yeah.
And what I was going to also say, remember that I was talking about the clip I saw on TikTok and then I went into that tangent. I just wanted to reference back to that because back to the whole dead people of it all.
Well, I forgot about the dead people.
A big, right. The claim, the famous Trump claim that like all these dead people were people were voting for dead people and the election. And so therefore the results aren't correct. The clip was basically like, it was 5 dead, deceased people who had ballots cast, which like, sir, you were fired by 81 million people, quote Kamala Harris. So just it's especially interesting now. And I think go like look up those stats, because we don't get like, you don't get voter data until kind of months after, even like a year after sometimes an election. So when all the steal stuff was happening, like we didn't even have voter information of like who voted and who didn't at that point, because it's all getting analyzed and for months after the election.
Yeah.
So like now we have all of that, and like they've been, all of the Trump lies have been debunked, but it's not really being talked about, I think, at the extent it should be at this point, where it's like, oh, by the way, all that shit he was spewing in 2020, here's the actual data of like fully debunking it. So I would love for that to be like a big narrative push as well as we head into October and then November. But yeah, all of it is just wild, wild, wild.
There's actually, so fun fact, if you will, of things that I learned about dead people voting is in different states, there's different rules in terms of absentee ballots. So some states allow, say you send in your absentee ballot early and you die before actual election day.
Right.
Some states will count it as like your last dying rest. Like which
they should. I mean, if I fucking vote and then I pass away before the election, like that fucking vote better be counted. Are you joking?
Well, then you better not like move to North Carolina.
I'd be rolling over in my urn, Sam. Literally, I'd be like,
honestly, that's what our next merch launch should be.
rolling over in my urn. No, I'm just literally. Like, this whole conversation is wild, but it's so important. And I am glad you went. I think that's really just overall cool that they brought creators there to also cover it. Well, it's important.
Creator singular. There was, I think, someone else that was supposed to be there that like had a flight issue or whatever, but it was me. I loved it. Also,
you're
I like
the hot commodity.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I mean, look at me. I was actually like dying a little bit because it was like a proper presser because it was me, yours truly. And then it was like CNN, CBS, ABC, NPR, New York Times. Like it was like literally the whole.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I was doing some of my mini mic interviews, literally before me was CNN and after me was CBS.
Fuck yeah.
So I was like, I love it. One of them, I was like, oh, it's me. One of them did accidentally ruin my audio on one of my videos, though, by being a little too loud in the background. So
classic.
But it's okay.
No respect for the creator content per usual from traditional media.
Yeah, I really was thinking about that the whole time because I was like, well, this could be interesting. I was a little, you know, friendly, bubbly little self. I was in a good social mood, so yada, yada. But I was like, oh.
I'm sure if there's only one creator there, they're like not threatened, but the DNC had them triggered. So,
yeah, no, for sure. There was a reporter that didn't wash their hands and I won't name their names, but.
Okay.
Anyways. Good to know.
Well, with all that said, I think this interview we have is a great, great next step because we talk a lot about obviously more of the stakes of the selection, how we get people to turn out, all of the things with a good friend of ours, should we say, a repeat guest, which we love. Mm-hmm. But I think just closing note on all of the election integrity stuff, like we just need to win by a landslide. And we kind of go over like how we can do that in this interview. So I'm excited for everyone to listen.
Our guest is none other than Congressman Maxwell Frost. He's back again, which you know, you guys know if we have someone on more than once, we're obsessed.
We love. So, I mean, who doesn't? Who doesn't love Congressman Maxwell Frost? Arguably the coolest person in politics.
Oh, wow. She's throwing out big compliments, big titles.
See? What other congressman or woman goes to Coachella? Weekend one and weekend two.
Okay, well, if Will Rollins is elected... In...
He said he doesn't go to Coachella.
I thought he said
he went. I'm pretty sure. I think he's that was like not.
You know what? Yeah. Because we can't remember. You guys should go listen to that episode and then let us know. Because, you know, fine. There it is.
Okay. Let's get into it.
Okay, fine. Let's get into it. Without further ado, here's Congressman Maxwell Frost. All right. Well, welcome back. The gov is in the building, as you just said. So we're back, guys, with Congressman Maxwell Frost. And we've got so much stuff to talk about because we are literally in the home stretch of this election season.
Nothing going on.
Nothing. It's so quiet. I don't even have anything to put in our newsletters. I'm just bamboozled by how quiet it is. You know, there's nothing happening. But I'm curious from your perspective what the biggest political story is right now. What's the one that's like giving you the most nightmare fuel, perhaps giving some bad dreams, you know, those types of things?
Well, I don't allow it to enter my dreams. You just can't allow it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
You gotta
dream catcher.
Yeah, exactly. But what I will say is the thing that really gives me a lot of it, like the most angst and the most anger and it frightens me the most is honestly this right wing plan. We've all heard of Project 2025. And a lot of it is just a laundry list of conservative policy points we already know about. But the part of it that scares me the most is the part that talks about the subversion of democracy and changing the way our institutions work. And the way for people to think about it is this. Right now, I would say that this is a left of center country. So generally, if every American voted every single election, I think mainly Democrats would get elected and Democrats and progressives would get elected. But we are also against a system that has been built to favor and help out the right wing more. And we see relics of this, right? Jim Crow relics. We see things like the filibuster. We see things like the Electoral College system, which generally favors the right wing. And all these little things that have been put in our system to make it more difficult to have progress. And so for me, I think if you're a progressive, especially, the thing ahead of us that we need to focus on the most is changing our systems so it reflects the want and wants and needs of the American people more. Getting big money out of politics, right? Making sure the members of Congress can't buy and trade stock. Making sure that we reform our Supreme Court justice system. All these different things. We have a lot to undo, a lot of harm to undo. But Project 2025 is about strengthening these Jim Crow relics that exist now in our government and adding new ones and making it harder to undo these things. Essentially, what the right wing has noticed is that 70% of Gen Z voted for Democrats last election cycle. It turns out young people don't like fascism or white supremacy or Christian nationalism. And so they're wising up and saying, oh my God, in 10 years, most of the electorate is just going to be against our far right ideology. And we're not going to change what we believe in. In comes Project 2025. Let's make it so if we get in power, we can change the system so there is a permanent conservative stamp on the government so it doesn't matter who wins the elections. That's the thing that I'm thinking about the
most. Yeah, I love that frame, especially just like it's important to think of it like that so holistically, and that like Project 2025 isn't just like one thing that popped out of thin air, but it is a continuation of these kinds of systemic issues that we've seen like tenfold. So I love that frame, but I'm curious what that looks like electorally for you of like, okay, how do we make systemic changes? Like, is that a trifecta? Do we have to get voting rights and do all these things? Like what do you see as the solution electorally as we head into an election?
It is making sure that we elect Kamala Harris as the president of the United States, that we have a Democratic majority in the House, which is looking very likely, and that we keep the Senate, which right now of those three goals is the most unlikely to happen. But we have to keep all three, because here's the thing. Kamala Harris elected president, we have the House. If we don't have the Senate, there goes a lot of the agenda. You just can't, it cannot be done, because we have the right wing that will run one of the most powerful parts of the government. And so what people need to realize is it's important to vote for president, but you got to vote up and down the ballot, because you have to give the president the means to achieve their agenda. Right. And Hakeem Jeffries has said, you know, if we have this, the first two bills on the House floor are the Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. These two bills will help unlock our democracy and make it more accessible for people across the country and help preempt a lot of the horrible racist laws we're seeing in the South and in the state of Florida that are making it harder to vote. That gives me a lot of hope. We need to look at systems. We need to spend the first 100 days focusing on systems and then getting to housing policy, gun violence, climate change, all these things that are really important. Because here's the problem. If we don't change the systems in this country to actually reflect the people, this generation's long battle of a few steps forward, a couple steps back, a few steps forward will continue. And we know that we need big, bold, transformational change. The reason why it's hard is because this system has been created to make it damn near impossible to move that quickly on things that matter. And I get it. I mean, think about if Republicans have the trifecta and we made it easier to get things done, right? We won't like the things they're doing.
Right.
But some would argue that it'd be a better representation of our democracy if, you know, we make sure that it's unlocked for everybody. So either way, voting rights, getting big money out of politics, all these different things I think are really important.
Yeah. And it's just like emphasis on the like, it's very possible, like soon, like we have the chance to do this. Like this is a real potential pathway to get these big, big changes that we want just in however many days, which is crazy.
Yeah. Well, as of recording this, it's like 49. So everyone
We're under the 50 mark, which is crazy.
Yeah, which is crazy. I had a friend text today. I was like, oh my God, it's 100 days to Christmas. I was like, wrong number. Wrong number to be paying attention to. Hello, we got something more important coming up.
Exactly.
I mean, love Christmas and all, but seriously. So thinking about that election, there seems to be at least last two debates, and obviously a lot shifted in between those. And so many of the media interviews have been about like undecided voters, which Maddie and I always say that undecided voters are the biggest attention whores of all time. And I'm a Leo and an only child, and I think that they like love attention more than me. So that's really saying something. But I'm curious like what your thoughts are about people that are still undecided in general. And also like if you're, say you have a friend that's undecided, they're like looking at this scenario of, okay, like two different tickets. What do you tell them? How do you advise them to like understand more, actually open the door to learning more?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Like usually in elections, most people don't start paying attention or making up their mind like to their strong support until literally, you know, sometimes really the last 2 months, even last month of the election. It's a big thing in congressional races, for instance. You know, in one of my first polls, I was polling like, I don't know, like between 2 and 5%. I think the first one I was at like 1% or something, but I was polling super low. 4 months out from the election, 4 or 5 months out from the election. And by the time we got to election time, you know, around a month before, I jumped up and I was tied with everyone because people started to pay attention. Now, the interesting thing about this is we have a, this is a very unique situation. We have a former president running. We have a vice president running. So a lot of people have already made up their minds. And so let's say in an election, let's say we're running against each other. And you know, 48% of voters say they're going to vote for you. 42% of voters say they're going to vote for me. But I am one of the most hated people in the country. I'm pretending to be Donald Trump. I'm one of the most hated people in the country, which means I have a bit of a ceiling there. And that small percentage of voters who say, I'm not sure yet, the reason the campaigns go hard for that amount is because that can make or break the election. And when we talk about the fact that Raphael Warnock won in Georgia because of the youth vote, what we mean by that is the voters for each party came up. The people you would expect to come out came out. So then you're like this. So then the question is, even though the youth vote isn't the largest quantity of voters, because they don't usually turn out and we're not put into the math of who's going to win, it makes a difference. Right. And that's the thing with undecided voters. We're doing the polling. We're talking with likely voters. We see where it's at. This is a very close election. I mean, I know we're pulling ahead in certain states, tied in other states, a little behind other states. I would tell you that we're at a tie right now and we need to continue to work. And that's why Kamala is fighting hard. The vice president's fighting hard for the undecided voters. But here's the thing. A lot of times we talk about undecided voters and people automatically think, yeah, they're talking about the center of the road people, the moderates. No, undecided means undecided. A lot of them are moderates. A lot of them are progressives. A lot of them are conservatives, right? I mean, it undecided doesn't like, you know, tell us how they think. It tells us where they are. And so our job as a campaign is to go out and try to get as many people as we can with a good economic message, a good message about safety, a good message about this country and the future of this country, and of course, distinguishing ourselves from the mess that is Donald Trump.
How do you think that looking at down ballot can help maybe push undecided voters over the finish line? Is that something that you look at? It's not just about the top of the ticket, but let's talk about like good governance down the ballot. What does that look like to you?
I mean, it's interesting. Certain districts are different than others. Generally, voters are not split ticket voting. So if you're a Democrat and you're voting for Kamala Harris, typically you're going to be voting for Democrats down the ballot. But there are a lot of districts where you have people who are going to split the two. And so you're going to have people who, you know, in Ohio, there's going to be not, you know, a group of people who vote for Sherrod Brown and vote for Donald Trump. There's going to be a group of people in Montana that, you know, vote for John Tester and vote for Donald Trump. And so the question is, you know, it's interesting. And we, you know, there's a lot of science behind this I think we need to crack, but it comes down to individuals versus party, and that people like that individual more than they align with the specific party. And that's part of the reason we see a lot of this and why it's important to pay attention to down ballot races. I have a lot of colleagues who represent Trump districts, And so you'll see them, that the way they're out on the campaign trail might be a little different. But I think what Kamala's doing in putting together a very strong economic message, especially as it relates to housing, I think she's pulling a lot of these Trump voters, not a ton of them, but a good amount of people who voted for Trump. I'm not saying they're Trump people. You know what I mean? Like, you have MAGA people, then you have conservatives who voted for Trump because they were the party's nominee. And I think that she is trying to make an effort to call out to this large group of people, specifically a lot of poor working class white folks in rural communities who were lied to by Donald Trump. You know, because in 2016, Donald Trump really did speak to an anxiety a lot of people in America have around wealth inequality. But the thing is that he said during the swamp, and people, you know, forgot that he is the swamp. Like, he is what we want to fight against in this government. And he lied to all of them. And so I think Kamala right now is saying, like, this is what a real progressive, or not even progressive, but here's what a real working families agenda looks like, where we center you and we're not blaming your problems on other people, which is what Donald Trump is all about.
Yeah, he loves the blame game party. And I know you're just talking about parties a little bit, but I want to pivot to like the type of party, to more of like a music festival party, because I know you're a music guy. I know you love a good festival, and I'm curious. We're curious. What's the best festival? What is like the must attend? And also, too, what is like the best headliner that you've seen to date?
What is the best festival? Well, Mad Soul Music and Arts Festival, which is my festival in Orlando, Florida, of course. But I'd say, as far as major music festivals of the ones I've been to, I would say Coachella. I worked there for like 6 years, so I'm a little biased, but it is a very unique festival. It's really beautiful. And I've just seen some of the best concerts I've ever seen there. Some of my fondest memories are at that festival. It's also just a beautiful setting, being in the Coachella Valley, surrounded by mountains, surrounded by the desert, but on a polo field. A lot of people don't know that Coachella is actually on a polo field. So you're on some of the greenest grass, surrounded by the desert.
Depends on which weekend you go.
Depends on which weekend. The grass deteriorates little by little. But the two weekends are different. Weekend one is the weekend people talk about. It's the one with all the collabs on stage and the special guests. But it's also more of an influencer heavy week, a celebrity heavy week. And weekend two is like the kids who have been saving up all year to go with their best friends to Coachella. And I feel like the vibe is a lot more chill, less like super exciting collaborations on stage, but like more of a chill vibe. They're each different. I enjoy them both, to be honest. And for the last many years, I've gone to both weekends, but I do think it's a great festival. I haven't been to a festival that has marked up to Coachella personally, as far as the operation and the experience and the lineup and everything. But I have been to a lot of really great festivals, you know, of music festivals. They're all different. They're all unique. I just went to Lollapalooza for the first time, and it you know, blew me away. I thought it was a beautiful festival. It was interesting. Definitely a lot younger of an audience, but like a cool festival. It felt more like a party, you know what I mean? But it was a good time.
Have you been to Outside Lands?
No, I haven't. Golden Gate Park, right?
Yeah, y'all have to come. It's fun.
I need to go to Outside Lands. I also love San Francisco, so.
Yeah, come. It's fun. We'll just have to wait a year.
Yeah, nice, we'll wait a year. But Mad Soul Music and Arts Festival, a combination of music and politics, you know, I think that's
up to your one. Next stop for sure. We have to go, Sam. Speaking of young people, vibes, culture, all the things, I feel like online, if you're a young person, you're seeing probably a lot of high vibes around the selection now with Kamala and Tim Walz at the top of the ticket. The vibes seem good. People seem excited. And I'm curious how you think that will ultimately translate. And also just like if there's a message to younger voters who are feeling good vibes, like why it's important to know, like, yeah, it's still kind of tied. Vibes aren't votes. Like what do you think is like the last push here of like, we need to get this done now? And like, what does that look like?
You're right. We have a lot of energy. I just did a back to school tour for Kamala, for the vice president, and the energy was really high. I never think anyone's going to come out to an event to like, you know, see me or like anything like that. But the turnout was really good. And honestly, it wasn't even to see me. It was like, they were just really excited about the campaign. But we had like each stop had, you know, over 100 people at most of them. Some of them were a little smaller, but the energy was really high. But the thing that really excites me is this tour, honestly, was really supposed to be for the hyper engaged students. And we'll double back and do a lot of the same places in October with a bigger event for kind of just a wider swath of students to get them to go out to the polls. The youth vote's going to be great. I think we're going to have the highest youth voter turnout in the history of our country, to be honest. And a lot of people feel like, oh, when was the last time that happened? Well, it was actually in 2020. You know, it just happened under Joe Biden. And I feel like she's going to be able to beat what the coalition the president built, which President Biden's built the largest coalition in Democratic history that we've seen. I think that Kamala's going to build an even bigger one, which again, like I try to tell people, we are a left of center country. And so I think that this is going to awaken this kind of beast of like even, you know, conservatives voting for Democrats, building a broad coalition. That's really what our party is about, is it really is a big tent. I know people talk about it a lot, but that's what distinguishes us from the Republican Party. And the other thing is the Republican Party is the party of no. Like most of their platform is just saying no to Democratic ideas.
Right. Right?
That's really most of their platform. They're the opposition party. Pramila Jayapal says this all the time. They're the opposition party. We're the proposition party, right? We're all about ideas for progress. And most of their platform, I mean, just look at Donald Trump's debate performance. Obviously, he's, you know, he's wild and stupid and all this and bigoted. But most of what he had to say was just saying no to ideas that the vice president has, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's no real vision. It's just status quo. Tax cuts for billionaire friends and doing nothing about the issues impacting our country. Doing nothing is going to move us forward. I can promise. Yeah.
Or it's Project 2025, which is like laid out for us. And also like, we don't want that vision.
Just say, what idiots? And the fact that they wrote it down. Like, what? What? Like, it's giving Sticky Bandits from Home Alone, speaking of Trump, which is a movie he was in. So I... Like, sometimes I am really glad when criminals are just really dumb, because here we are. We have something to work with and to point to, but it still blows my mind. Like, what in the world? I am speaking of, like, things that are just shocking. Is there anything that's really shocked you in recent weeks, whether it's a news story, something that's come out of Trump's mouth, something you've heard on the, you know, the campaign trail, anything that's made you be like, what?
I don't think Donald Trump could shock me anymore, but hearing him speak a bigoted, racist lie about Asian Americans on the debate stage really infuriated me. Honestly, surprised me. I didn't think he would bring that up on stage, but it just shows he is default. I believe Donald Trump is a neo-fascist that wants to implement a right-wing Christian nationalist, white supremacist ideology on our country. And fascism has a very specific playbook, right? We see it from all of these fascist leaders. What they do is they pick communities, marginalized communities, and blame the issues of the country on them with the hope that most of their base doesn't have a personal relationship with anyone from that community. So it's easier to villainize them. Haitian Americans, trans kids, LGBTQ plus community, undocumented immigrants. And the hope is that the rhetoric will go a long way because there's not a personal connection there. Because when you have a friend that is trans, when you have a friend that is Haitian, it is harder for those attacks to really stick and for you to blame all of the issues you have because of big corporations, corporate greed, billionaires, and conservative ideals, not blame it on the right people, but blame it on other communities that are oftentimes in the same boat, if not a worse boat than you. And so what fascists do is you spend a lot of time blaming issues and making up things about these people. And then they say, give me power and I will deal with it for you. I will deal with this issue for you. They create the issue, or they fabricate an issue. And then they say, to handle it, give me more power, give me more authority, give me the ability to do what I want, and I will help you. And that's how authoritarians come to power. And it's, you can read it throughout the course of human history. And that's what's going on here. They've decided now to go for Haitian Americans, which I represent one of the largest concentrations of Haitian Americans in the country. These are Americans. These are a lot of folks too that are fleeing from a country that historically has dealt with horrible tragedy. And right now what's going on in Haiti is very unique, horribly unique, that there's no government. the country's falling apart. There's gangs running around everywhere, controlling literal cities. And it's really tough. It's really bad. And they're coming to our nation that supposedly is supposed to say, we are a land of refuge with the human right of asylum that you can claim here. Many of these folks here on TPS, temporary protective status, which is a legal status, and they're working and they're living and they're paying taxes and they're our neighbors. And it's just disgusting to hear the Republican nominee and his vice presidential nominee are floundering so much in this campaign and they're sucking so bad that now they're saying, let's default. Let's go back to the typical, like the fascist playbook. Let's be as bigoted and racist as we can. And let's use the politics of fear to get people out there. Because if you don't vote for me, someone's going to eat your cat or something. I mean, it's like laughable, but then, you know, I have a lot of people making jokes about it, which I get. I'm never going to shame people for making jokes, but I have a hard time laughing about it. And I'm a jokester. I like to laugh about stuff, but I have a hard time making light of it just because I represent so many Asian Americans and I understand like what they're going through right now. And I find it purely disgusting. And so that honestly has been a little surprising to me as of lately.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like so dangerous.
Yeah. Like the amount of school closings that Springfield, Ohio has now had to deal with like the last few days because of bomb threats and evacuations as a result is so crazy to me. And I was saying this to a bunch of people the other day. It's just also still so crazy to me that people are like, you know what? Like, let's, our solution here is violence. Like that's what this should be. Like, it's so crazy. I really can never wrap my head around that. And to, you know, asterisk your point about sort of the mentality is J.D. Vance has literally gone on record saying that he's fabricating stories if that's what
he
has to
do. Yeah, I was going
to
say, didn't he just say he made it up anyways? And it's just like, yeah, you're now threatening people's lives for your political made up stories.
And that's what Donald Trump wanted. Like,
yeah.
You know, we're all looking at like, wow, Donald Trump or J.D. Vance really sucks like on the campaign trail and everything. And it's like, the thing we have to know is Donald Trump wasn't looking for a vice president to help him win an election. He's looking for a vice president to help him steal an election, to help him overturn an election, to help, you know what I mean? And that's what somebody would do anything he says, make up stories, spread these lies. J.D. Vance is that guy for him. And so, of course, he's out there saying, yeah, I'm going to say what I need to say to win this election. So people should believe him the first time.
Agreed. Well, as we wrap, what, any closing notes on, as you send our audience off into the final push of this election?
Of course, making sure people are voting is really important, but I would encourage people, a lot of times, I have a lot of young people too come up to me or DM me saying, how can I help? And the first thing you can do is reach out to your friends, to your family, and make sure that they understand why them voting is important to you. And I think a lot of times we discount how powerful friend-to-friend interaction, family-to-family member interaction can be. At March for Our Lives, when I was there, we saw this campaign and took part in this campaign where kids wrote letters to their grandparents saying why they thought voting for Gun Sense Champions was important to them. And we saw a lot of success from it. So reach out to your friends and family. Your challenge is this. Make a list of 8, let's say 10. Make a list of 10 friends and family and commit to reaching out to them in the next week or two. Just ask them if they have a plan to vote. And if they don't plan on voting, just tell them why it's important. Don't shame them. Don't yell at them. Don't say what the hell's wrong with you. Just tell them why it's important to you and just leave it out there.
Love it.
Love it.
Cool.
Perfect. Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.